I'd like to open by letting you know exactly what the method is in our madness here. Our plan is 4 times a year to gather together in a combined Sunday school class for the purpose of talking a little bit about kind of the state of the union, the state of the mystical union, if you will. Seminary jokes are never funny in any other context than seminary, so we'll just let that one die where it died. What we want to do is on at least 4 occasions, beginning of every quarter, we want to do a small little pause, talk about where we are, update you on financial matters, and see how we're pushing forward. But in January, our main thing to do is to do what we believe the Apostle Paul began to do with the opening of every single one of his letters, which was he started all of his letters by reminding his audiences exactly who they were. And they talked about, Paul talked about their identity in Christ, their identity as the people of God. And in addition to that, he then talked about their mission of what it was they were going to extend themselves out in the world to do. We got a chance to hear from Clint Wilkie this morning on exactly that topic of how God is calling us out into his kingdom for its establishment and otherwise. Well, there's been a lot of time that's been spent among your leadership talking about exactly who it is that we are. And what we're trying to gain by all this is what organizational management expert Patrick Lencioni refers to as alignment, so that we make sure that whether or not you are serving in the nursery on Sunday morning, whether or not you are serving as a deacon or an officer, or whether or not you are simply attending a small group Bible study that happens somewhere in our community, you know why you're there, and you know how that activity attaches itself to the broader mission of this church. If we're not aware of that, if we're not sort of clear on that, usually that's when a church begins to lose its focus. And when you lose your focus, people get hurt. And when people get hurt, bad things happen to churches. And that's what we're hoping not to happen. So every single January, Lord willing, as long as you've got me in your employ as pastor, we're going to sit down and talk about what our vision is for the upcoming year and review one more time about who we are. And so we began last year by talking a little bit about the categories under which we organize how we think about a church. Now, I know a lot of you are saying, you know, you use a lot of these P words in here, and I appreciate all that. Do you expect us to sort of know these words and be able to repeat them to others? And my answer to that is yes, absolutely. The hope is that some of the language that we're trying to employ as a body begins to become shared vocabulary among each other so that we can move forward along as a group of people and that we know what we mean when we use these words. We're going to talk a good bit about our purpose. Our purpose is the answer to the question of who we are. We're going to talk about our principles, those topics that we love to return to on a regular basis. We're going to talk about our posture. Our posture describes the way we act in the community. What are the things that are peculiar to us as a body? And then finally, we're going to look at what our passion is. What is it that we do? What do we focus on in that regard? And so what I want to begin by asking you this question before we dive into these headings is this question. How do you talk about Christ Pres to your neighbors and friends and coworkers? What are the topics that come up when you describe our church? When people ask you about your church, what kinds of things do you say? When you leave church activities, what are the kinds of things that you say that you love the most about our fellowship here? Well, what I want to encourage you in is that the leadership of this church, the elders especially, have not tried to create something that they're hoping will be there. Rather, they're trying to name something that we're already doing. And by naming it, giving us a sense of clarity, and by God's grace, alignment in our mission, especially as we go forward in our next year. So that's kind of where we're going. So let's look at some of these headings here and begin in looking at our purpose. The purpose of Christ Pres, you will hear us say every single Sunday, right? Christ Presbyterian Church seeks to be a home for those who have found hope in the gospel and a place of healing for the world. Hope, home, and healing really center us as a ministry. But I want to spend a little bit of time this morning talking about the way in which those three words came together in our theological understanding of what we are as a church. And we begin with our purpose by the reason why there's anything. One of the things that makes us a reformed church is because every single thing that we do terminates in the expansion of the glory of God. Why is there something rather than nothing? The simplest answer to that question is that God exists to bring himself glory. We think Christ's presence is here because God is in the business of expanding his nature, his attributes to the entire world. And he's given us the responsibility to do that in Oxford and Lafayette County especially, and around the world. So God bringing glory to himself is a major one. But secondly, we find that as we look to the biblical story, that God created a realm. He created a space that was intending to be under his lordship, that he calls his kingdom. And he especially assigned image bearers, what we call human beings, to represent that glory to the rest of the world, to show his attributes to the rest of the world. And what happened was, is in the Bible storyline, there began to be something laid out in the way in which human beings dealt with that mission. And what we find then in the biblical story is that there's a storyline that falls out that begins with creation and the goodness of all things in creation. It then moves to the great cosmic car wreck of the fall and the sin that man fell into. It then moves into this redemption that's going to be accomplished by Christ, but pictured in the Old Testament by all the sacrificial system. And then finally finishing in the consummation of God's kingdom, not just with the coming of Christ, but one day, someday, in the consummation of all things and the glorification that Brian has been talking to us about in Sunday school this whole time. But I would say without question, the most important of those biblical storyline headings that affect our mission as a church, the fall has got to be the biggest one. Because when Adam and Eve, we're going to talk a lot about this in the weeks to come, actually, in our study through Ephesians. When Adam and Eve pull themselves out of alignment with God's purposes for the world, there are two fundamental broken relationships with which they have to deal. The first one is a broken vertical relationship between them and God. You know this because Adam and Eve, when God shows up in Genesis chapter 3 to walk with them in the cool of the day, are hiding from him. They feel guilty. Guilt is sort of repellent in that regard. And so there's a broken vertical relationship between man and God. But in addition, we find that there's a broken horizontal relationship between Adam and Eve. In other words, it's not just that they're broken between God, it's that now there's this new dynamic that's introduced between them that the Bible calls shame. Or, if you're in Genesis chapter 3, it comes into the theme of nakedness. Adam and Eve look at each other and they realize they're naked. For the first time, they have something they want to hide from each other. Prior to that, there was nothing. There was nothing but goodwill and joy and mutuality going on between them. But with the introduction of shame, that begins to fall apart. So that sets out the Bible storyline. And what you see is God sort of introducing things throughout his ministry of the Bible to help repair some of these ruins. God deals with the broken vertical relationship between him and his people through the message of the cross. When Jesus dies on the cross, he both fulfills the law of what mankind needed to be before God, but he also receives himself the punishment for our sin. And having done so now, we can approach God, not with a sense of hiding and of fear, but we can approach him knowing that he sees us like we were Jesus. That's the beauty of that. And so there's no more central value to our hope as God's people than to talk about the cross of Christ, the gospel, as contained on every single page of the Bible, that the scripture alone is the essence and source of our hope. And we talk about that naturally in a number of different ways. But God's answer to broken horizontal relationships is this brand new organism that he is fashioning, that actually has organization as well, that he calls the church. God says, I'm going to deal with our broken vertical relationship with the cross, but I want you to begin with the brokenness and the shame that exists between each of you in this institution I'm forming called the church. And that church exists as the fundamental place of restoring what we're supposed to be to each other. Because in the end, what it means for us to be a church is to be together. All of human history is on its way to us sort of uniting ourselves to the Godhead, who is three persons in one essence, which means that there's relationship at the heart of the universe. And so as we build relationships with each other of enriched and sort of deep, powerful sharing and loving and mutuality, we prepare ourselves for our oneness with Him when we finally reach Him in glory. Okay? So that gives us, obviously, very clearly then, a mission. And that mission is to expand the work of that church into every single corner of the earth. We talk about in Revelation chapter 22 that there's a tree right there in the midst of the celestial city in heaven whose leaves are for the healing of the nations. That's why we're here. God has placed us in this community not for ourselves, like Clint was preaching to us this morning. He has placed us here so that we can be agents on His behalf for the places that are around us that are still experiencing the effects of that brokenness. So every single Sunday we stand up and we say that we are a church that discovered a hope in the gospel contained in the Bible, and that that hope fashioned us into a home that the Bible calls a church, and it sort of launched within us a great healing that we're moving out into the world. Okay? So theologically speaking, that's where we sort of began to look at our purpose. Why do we say hope, home, and healing? Well, that's the theological reasons for it. But let me move to the second sort of idea, and that's the principles. What do we mean when we talk about Christ's presence principles? Well, we talk about what we just talked about, the fact that we are a hope and a home in bringing a healing to this community. But it turns out that there are actually theological concepts that connect with this. I would describe these as like topics you're going to hear us talk about a lot. You're going to hear the lingo of the word gospel. We think the whole Bible is about the gospel. On every single page, God is moving us to that reality. With this idea of home, you're going to hear about the church. What is the nature of our fellowship here? What is this real fellowship that we have among each other? And then finally, you're going to hear this topic of the kingdom and how that expands out into the world. Now, small little aside here. I do recognize a lot of times when you come to church on Sunday morning, you're kind of like, oh, that's nice. I'm assuming there'll be like, you know, a preacher that'll get up there and talk or something, and I'll find something to do to occupy myself while he's up there droning on. But it was my plan when we jumped into this whole endeavor to begin to walk us in a 3-year program through each of these topics. So I hope you realize that the reason why in the first year of my time here, we preached through the Gospel of Luke was so that we could begin to expand among ourselves this idea of what it means for Jesus to be compelling to His people. Do you remember how almost every single sermon I opened up, I said, today we're asking the Gospel of Luke this question about what would be compelling about Jesus of Nazareth that would make us want to follow Him? Of course, the answer to that is the cross. That's what our hope is. We did an entire year in that among ourselves. We began, though, in the summer to begin this topic of the church. We looked at Exodus all last fall in sort of the origins of the people of God and how God began to fashion His people from the very beginning of His intentions with Abraham and the Israelites. We're going to begin next week our study through the book of Ephesians, which really is the New Testament book on the church, as we start to realize this is where God was going, right? That's why we jumped into that. Finally, next year, this coming fall, we're going to take our sort of stroll through the ideas of the kingdom. What does it mean for us to be a healing in this community? And so we're going to look in the fall at a study through the Ten Commandments, because the Ten Commandments are God's Old Testament way of expressing His will for how human beings work and flourish together. That's what the Ten Commandments are. It's like a blueprint for how your soul works the best. And that's how we're going to look in the fall. And then next spring, Lord willing, we're going to look at this sort of brand new countercultural world that Christians are trying to establish by studying Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And we're going to look through all of that whole passage there in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 to see what it is that God has to say to us about this countercultural thing. So you see, that's exactly why we've been preaching the way in which we have. It's not been completely random for you, in case you ever wondered about that. But those are what we're calling our principles. One of the things that you'll find that organizational experts will tell you is that you also need to establish some sort of lingo about why it is that you do things the way that you do in your community. Your posture is what we would call how we behave our behaviors that sort of describe who we are. Your behaviors are not always aspirational, what you want to be, but oftentimes it begins to start a conversation of what you've already become in a community. And so the leadership began to hash through this question of how has God blessed us uniquely to be able to make an impact in this community? What are we like as a community? And so we came up with about six things. The first thing is we stand on the Bible for everything that we do. We're the Bible people in this community. If you're coming to Christ Prez, it's more than likely because we've centered our activity around the Bible and the study of the Bible, because we believe it's that profound for our fellowship. Secondly, we are a hospitable community. We want to do whatever we can to establish welcome. You do realize that is your reputation. Over and over again, when we do new member interviews, they come back and say, I showed up and I couldn't believe how many people spoke to me. Seemed like this guy named Rob Coleman was just all over me when I came in to visit this time. It was amazing to me. We literally have people say that all the time. Rob, God bless you for what you do. We want to be that kind of welcoming community. Hold that thought, by the way. We're a celebratory committee. You throw really good parties. And we tried to do that in the last year of getting us together on a regular basis to talk about these kind of things, to have a breakfast here this morning as we look forward to what God would have us do. Stay tuned for that one as well in this coming year. We talk about being incarnational. To be incarnational means that you embody yourself in a community. What that means is we don't want to view the issues of God's kingdom expansion in our community from the cheap seats. We want to be involved. We want to be in the midst of people's lives. We don't want to let our mission in this community be one of boycotting or taking stands against. We want to be a community that shows up in the midst of those things and says, how does God call us to act in this, in the midst of this? That's different, by the way. It also means, therefore, because half of the citizens of this city are college students, that we have to be aware of the fact that they are among us. And love them in every single possible way we can, whether that's through a Sunday school that we offer them, or whether it's simply getting behind the efforts of what RUF and InterVarsity are doing on campus, two of the ministries that we support very strongly at this church. Finally, we talk about cultural engagement. Again, we look at a group of people that are saying we don't just sort of sequester God's work in the world to Bible studies. We think that we see God at work in the arts. We see God at work in the educational systems of this community. We see God at work behind the politics of the decisions that are made by our leadership, whether it's in the mayor's office or whether it's on the chancery court. We see God's influence longing to come to bear on the commerce, the education, the artistic work of every part of this community. And we want to be able to serve that in any way that we can as our members leave our doors and go out into those places. And you're going to hear more about that. So our posture is described by these six attributes that we feel like we've done in the past and that we want to continue to move forward with as well. Which brings me to our last sort of discussion about passion. What do we mean by our passion as a church? Well, our passion really gets drawn from a topic that comes up in Acts chapter 2. When you see what the first Christians were doing as a community together, as they gathered. And what we found was they were a community of worship that was central to who they are. We found they were a community of fellowship that were together. They experienced this deep fellowship that the New Testament calls koinonia. We found also that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and studied it every single day. And we also found that during that time, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved daily. And then finally, we found that they had a ministry of mercy where they were coming to help the physical and financial and emotional needs that the people had around them. But what sort of church planting experts will tell you is that eventually God, in his grace, begins to cause one, sometimes two, of these various attributes, all of which need to be in place in order for you to be a biblical church. But it'll cause one or two of those to sort of percolate to the top that become the things that your first foot forward into a community. In other words, what's the first thing that people are probably going to note in us about a community? And what your leadership determined, and I agreed with them, is that fellowship and teaching tend to be the places where we shine. Fellowship, again, for reasons I've mentioned, because we're known as a welcoming community, a celebrating welcoming community. But teaching, simply because of the fact that we are a group of people that are very, we are theologically self-conscious. We're the guys who kind of talk about our theology a fair amount. And that's one of our ways to sort of contribute to this community. And so what we say then is in the sense of our sort of particular passion is that we want to be a place that reaches, trains, and grows maturing believers by encouraging healthy spaces for rich fellowship. Does that make sense? Our goal here is to sort of watch that growth happen through the Bible's teaching, but those things need to be fleshed out in the relationship that we're building with each other. Fellowship and teaching tend to be sort of at the head of what we do. Okay? So our vision in that sense is sort of summarized by these things. And I'm telling you, every doggone year that you keep me employed, we're going to go through these things. Doesn't mean we're not going to tweak them in years to come. Doesn't mean we're not going to sort of maybe work through them. But eventually, we're going to continue to work on this so that we remind ourselves, how do I talk about what I am, what we are as a group of people? How do we push forward? So this morning, what I want to talk about is how did we do? If you'll remember, this time last year, we launched through and tried to set goals for ourselves. These goals were sort of helped established by the leadership and the elders and the deacons. It was very much owned by the staff as we began to work through it. And lots of you sort of came alongside us in order to accomplish these things. So I want to review those goals this morning and ask ourselves how we accomplished it. You'll remember last year that we said that we wanted to develop a comprehensive plan of how to do small groups well. I want to talk a lot about this when we get to this year's forthcoming goals, because in many ways I felt like this was an educational year for us. Do I think that we came up with a solid, easy understanding of our small group structure? Nope, we're not quite there yet. But we took a lot of steps in trying to figure it out. Why? Because there's three places where you discover small group fellowship happening in this particular church. The first one, obviously, is in our small groups that we have. Men's group has added a number of small groups. The women's ministry has added a number of small groups. We've seen the youth add small groups. Small groups are popping up. Many of you have jumped into some of those. That's the first place where it happens. Second place where it happens is in our shepherding groups. Our shepherding groups, to be honest with you, are some of the bedrock of this church. So many of you were enfolded in the life of this church through the vitality of those shepherding groups. And yet, as we have grown, those have gotten more complicated, have they not? It's harder to find times in which people can all get together. It's harder on elders who have so many people in their shepherding groups to really feel like they're knowing each other. So we had to work on that. The third place where we have sort of small group interaction is through our Sunday school classes, which is exactly the reason why we sort of separated things out this fall into age and stage Sunday schools. Those are our three primary avenues where we're seeking to do this. And I would say that this job, if I were to give myself an evaluation, is about halfway done. We know a lot more than we knew last year, but we're not quite there yet. Secondly, we said last year that we wanted to train officers. We were in desperate need. This time last year, we had 6 elders and 6 deacons, which is nowhere near enough for a 550-member church like we are. And so by God's grace, we sort of launched some nominations, which you participated in. We had 45 people get nominated for officer positions. 25 of those people went through the entire training. And then finally, we elected 10 of them just a few weeks ago. And Lord willing, 2 weeks from today, we'll have a big installation service for those men who will come, which is an answer to God's prayer. So on that one, we feel very good about how we were able to sort of get officers together. Next, we talk about our inquirers class. Broadly speaking, the inquirers class was intending to sort of make it clear for people about how they can sort of make their way into the life of the church. And we took a lot of steps in that regard. We offered the inquirers class back to back to make it easier to do some of the makeup classes. We also narrowed it down to a couple of weeks, making it a 5-week course that you can conceivably do in about a month. There's also some areas for us to grow, though. I think this is probably one of those 75% done sort of aspects, because we hope to make it a little more streamlined about what happens when people sort of go through the class and then meet with the elders before they come up for membership themselves. So there's some area to grow in the inquirers class revamp as well. Fourthly, we talked about putting together transition teams for the new building. We talked about needing a wedding team. We talked about needing an inventory team to figure out what we needed here. We talked about needing to revamp the business team to oversee all the financial aspects of it. I would say this one we had a very good year in. We have a completely revamped business team that's being headed by our chairman, Glenn Ingram. We have a wedding team that has gone over the top in their work with helping weddings. Can I announce who the first wedding is in our church? Or would I be in trouble for that? I'm not looking at anybody in the church. I shouldn't do that, or I should do that. And it turns out we might have one of our own members to be the first wedding in the church with the Davidson wedding in October, I think is exactly right. But here's the deal. When you open up a big old building, everybody wants to get married in your building. Everybody. And so what we've had now is we got an entire manual now for how to do weddings, thanks to the work of Terry and Kim for getting that, all that together. Terry Sanford and Kim Ferris. Okay, so but now there's still more work to be done, though. And I'll say this: the design team sort of stayed together and was able to fashion an interiors team, so that now we have some interiors design that's being going on. This next year, we're going to have sort of an outdoor landscaping team to do some of the outside parts of the church. And then, of course, as we start to move, those things will continue as well. More on that in just a moment also. Finally, we wanted to increase volunteers. I said this time last year that we wanted to increase volunteer participation by 50%, which we didn't come close to. To be honest with you, we were around the 10 to 15% mark in terms of increase, which by God's grace is a good increase. But it probably was a little ambitious for us to think that we could handle and deal with a 50% increase. But that doesn't mean that we're not still looking for people to find ways that they can participate in the ministries and life of the church. So that's how, when we look back, I think that's kind of how we did. That's how we jumped into it. The question then becomes then, where are we going from here? What's next on our list of things? So as the leadership has been working through some of these ideas, we want to come up with a handful of stuff that we want to put for you for the forthcoming year. Number one, we want to talk about celebrating well. Give me a second while I get my notes in front of me. In order for us to think about a year of transition, we realize that part of what is going to be important for the souls of this church is for us to rejoice in what God has done. And I'm telling you, church, oh, Church of Christ, rejoice. We should have sang that before Sunday school today, because you've got a lot to rejoice about. We need very much so to celebrate the fact that the Rooted campaign is coming to an end at the end of March. Can you believe it? At the end of March, it'll be 3 years that we had a Rooted campaign. And I'm delighted to say that you have been jaw-droppingly faithful in your giving to what you pledged in the Rooted campaign. Not only that, you've given over and above it. So we will probably end up about 20% more givings than you pledged 3 years ago. Hey guys, wonderful. Congratulations. God was at work among you. And so in order to sort of recognize that, we're going to have a party on the first weekend in April at the property, Lord willing, where we're going to drag out a bunch of food trucks where you can go and buy yourself all kinds of food. And we're going to walk through the building to show you what they've been doing. And we're going to have a giant party out there. Pam Grafton's involved in that. She's already getting her team together. That's going to be a lot of fun. Secondly, we need to celebrate this building. It is not psychologically healthy for you to abandon spaces where God was at work in your life without saying thank you to those spaces. And you can love where you are right now, or you can despise where you are right now. But God was at work in this place. And we need to celebrate what God did here, and we're going to. We've got some plans in the works to commission some of our artists among our community to actually put some drawings together, some paintings that you can even have in your home to remember, to raise an Ebenezer in your own home of how God worked at you in places like this. We're also obviously hoping to have a dedication service when we get to the new building, where we celebrate finally arriving what we've all been longing for, to get into this new place to launch our new mission. So what we want to look back on 2020 and say, did we celebrate well? Did we have a fullness of heart that marked our transition to these places that we were glad for God to work in? Second thing we want to do is we want to embrace change. We want to embrace change, he said, emphasizing the word embrace. Honestly, this one probably is the least tangible goal, which those of you who are into SMART goals know that it's got to be measurable. This one probably is the least measurable. But it's going to take us work to get ready to transition. The first thing we've got to realize we're going to have to transition is just by knowing where stuff is. Where's the nursery and how do I check them in? What do I do with that? How do I get to my Sunday school class? Tell me exactly how parking is going to work. Like where's the spaces? Where are the entrances that I'm supposed to go in? I realize that may sound mundane to you, but it's an absolutely vital experience to lowering the level of frustration that you might feel in the transition. Because look, let's be honest with this. And I think that this is really important to grasp. Many of you have been coming here for decades. And what we really don't realize is how often when we came here, part of what we came to love about this place was the fact that it was in a skating rink. In other words, what it spelled to you was that this place lacks pretension. I mean, look where they meet. We don't put on airs. We don't put on stuffiness. And for many of you, that sort of raised itself as a level of pride. And you know what's funny? That's not wrong. You're exactly right. I think that describes us as a fellowship. We don't do, you know, we're not sort of trying to sort of put a bunch of smoke and mirrors in front of you. Now all of a sudden we got to move in a brand new building that cost all of us dearly. You need to hear me. For almost every one of you, there's something on the inside that's going to feel wrong about that. Why did we do this? What was the purpose? But one of the things that we believe that God is doing is he's sort of helping us to embrace this change of not being defensive when we begin to feel those things, but actually wanting to wrap our arms around him and say, okay, God, now you've given us this new sort of hand that's dealt to us. What can we do with it? How can we see God move? How can we see more people ministered to? How can we expand our reach into those places, people's lives who need healing as well? To embrace that change. It also means that there's going to be change to embrace even in our worship services. The exaltation team is working, sometimes it feels like around the clock, to sort of talk about what it will look like for us to worship in a new space. You need to understand that in the new space, the sanctuary will be equipped with two very large screens on either side of the front part of the stage, which will probably have the lyrics sort of put up in front of them. I know many of you have sort of retched on the inside at the idea of there being like motion graphics and bubbles floating up behind the lyrics, but I can assure you that we're not going to change anything about the tone of our worship services to something like that. Not only that, we've committed ourselves to being a group of people that really kind of are the retuned hymns people. We're not going to change our worship style or our music in any way. But we are going to try to find ways to get our heads up so we're not looking down to sing. And when your head's up, you cannot imagine how much differently it sounds. And those screens are going to help us in that particular way. But you know what? Some of you are going to walk in there and be like, oh, are we doing this now? Is that what we're becoming? Because that's not what I signed up for when I joined this church. Not only that, we may be talking about ways in which to do communion differently. You know, one of the ways in which we do communion by passing things out is not sacrosanct. Lots of people do things in other ways that engage the imagination in our hearts, sometimes by coming forward. With the layout of this place, we're not able to come forward to receive communion, but we're going to think about the possibility this year of maybe putting up tables at the front of that sanctuary and letting you come forward to receive the Lord's Supper. Every time? I don't know. At least one time? Maybe. But those are kinds of things that are going to come forward that we're hoping that you're anxious for and looking forward to as we talk about this change that we're all going through. What else did I say that we need to get ourselves ready for? No, that's it. Yeah, I think finally we're going to look back and ask about, did we look back and say that God grew us together and didn't divide us more? I will say this, I want to take a moment to answer a very quick question that I get every day. Are we going to do two services or one in the new building? Okay, and while I've got you all here, the answer is, I don't know. If you'll look at the monitor outside that Whitney helped put together, there's some gorgeous video that we were able to do of the new building from drone footage. Is she put a prayer request at the very end that God would grant us the ability to move into that building midsummer. We want to move to that midsummer. Why? Because if we could get 3 or 4 weeks in that building prior to give us some practice, it'll be a whole lot easier when the students in the onslaught come on in the middle of August. So pray for that. My dream that I'm praying for is July 1st. I would love for us to have our first worship service at the 1st of July. Now that will likely be what we'll call a soft opening. We won't do the big massive outreach to the community and put it in the newspapers and whatnot until August. Because we need time to figure this out. We need to know where we're going. Where's that? I don't know where the bathroom is. Where could that be? We need for us to figure that in the meantime so that we can help those people that end up coming to investigate the new church. So a lot of those sort of changes coming up, which we're going to summarize by this idea that we're there to establish welcome. Look, you need to understand, there will be lots of visitors that will come to the church. There will be people who will tell you to your face, to be honest with you, I was never going to go to church in a skating rink. And you're going to be offended. You're going to be like, well, you know what? The door is that way. And don't let it hit you in the rear end on the way out, okay? Because we don't want your kind here. That's what you're going to feel. But here's the thing, y'all. That's an opportunity for you to say, was I like all put together when I came to this church? Did I have all my priorities and right when I came to this church? No. People are going to come through that door who don't have a clue. But that's an opportunity for us. In other words, you're going to sit inside of your pew and do something that you feel already right now where you're looking around being like, I don't know half these people. What I want you to do is say, praise the Lord, because he's given us the opportunity to welcome people in. And so for that reason, we're actually sort of deploying the wedding team, the business team, and to look for the ways in which we implement. This is going to involve a number of things. Number one, we're going to upgrade our visitor welcome. Right now, we do not have sort of a unified way to sort of both gather the names of visitors and contact them well. The enfolding committee is working on that. There's subcommittees that are helping to put those things together. But that's going to be slow because we don't know what it's going to be like in the new building. So be patient with us. But by the time we get to this summer, we want to have a way in which visitors can come in, get information about what this church is about, and receive something that could help them know what their next steps would be. That also means that we're going to have a huge and massive need for greeters next year. One of the sort of benefits of this building is ain't but one front door. In the new building, there's four where everybody gets to pour in. Now, we're working on strategizing where we think people will probably want to come in the front door. But for some of you who'd simply have a friendly face, we're not asking you to lead a Bible study. We're not asking you to get up in front of people and share your testimony. But if you could hold a bullet in your hand and be like, we're so glad you're here, and just tell them where the nursery is. Or like, yeah, we're going to start here in about 20 minutes. That's what we're going to need from you. And we're going to have lots of signups as we come to be like, hey, at least for August and September, I need an army of greeters, an army. And we're going to train you. We're going to tell you what we want you to do. We're going to give you, let you know when each place is going to be. And all why? Because we're going to establish welcome. And we'll give ourselves a grade this time last year. Number four, we need to make sure that in this coming year, we secure our financial situation going forward. Again, I told you that one of the most amazing things that happened was our Rooted campaign. It is an unmitigated success. God was able to do an amazing thing in our midst. And we'll talk specific numbers when we get to the end of March. But suffice to say, the money that we were able to raise in this building is going to incur new expenses for us as a church. So I want to sort of give you an idea of what that's going to require of us and look at a little bit of our history here. And again, I know some of you are saying, why didn't he do a stacked graph there? Because I couldn't figure out how to do that until too late this week. So bear with me. This first column here is from the fiscal year 16-17 on what our actual spending was. Our budget was a little bit more than that. The second column is what the money that we took in that was contributed to our general fund. Does that make sense? The last column on the far right is adding this column to what you gave to the building. Does that make sense? So this is total giving of both funds, both general and building. This one is just general fund. Why am I highlighting that? Well, take a look at the trends. You can see how our expenses are going up at a nice sort of gentle pace until you get out here. What happens out here? That's when we got to start paying the note on this loan. Because once we sort of make the loan for the church, as we start to nurse that note, we've got a lot of things that we're trying to do. Now, you'll notice that we tried to sort of do a little bit of incremental shift by increasing our budget for the 1920 year, simply because we wanted to get ready and not have this one just smack us in the face. But what I want you to notice is, though, you've been taking in a remarkably healthy amount of money in your giving. And yes, expenses are going up to some degree as we prepare for this move. But notice where the general fund has sort of stayed. The general fund has stayed. And what you have last year was our first year when we were a little bit upside down from general fund expenses to general fund giving. And if you'll remember, I came to you this last summer and talked about the fact that we were a little bit behind towards the end of the year, which you responded marvelously. But we finished the year a little bit slightly behind. Here's what we are counting on happening, that as soon as in the middle of this year, the Rooted campaign finally ends, we're praying that God would allow these people that are giving, obviously much in excess of what it takes for us to run the church, are not going to completely stop giving. Some of you I know have actually divided up what you were normally going to give, some to building and some to general. Well, we're going to hope that the rest of that goes all to general from here on forward so that we can continue to take care of our operating expenses, not the least of which is the note. Many of you, when you get to the new building, are also going to be asking about phase two. And the reason you're going to ask about phase two is because our seating for adult Sunday school class in the new building is non-existent. And we're going to have to divide off the sanctuary with rolling partitioned walls. that's going to be incredibly inconvenient for you. You're going to be like, when are we going to get adult Sunday school space? Answer, phase two. Well, when are we going to start that? When we have that loan paid down to enough of a point where we can afford to finance phase two, then we'll do it. And Lord willing, in the months to come, we'll be talking about what those amounts are and where we want God. But we still want to have an incentive for where we're headed. But our prayer for this year, especially when it comes to our giving, is that as soon as Rooted is over, some of you will realize that you've actually been fine in the margin that you've been living under in your giving to Rooted. Would you consider giving that to the general fund this year? That'd be so great, because then we could finish out this year in the black again from our general fund and be ready for the next challenge of the next year of meeting that building and getting that thing paid for. That's what we're hoping for when we talk about securing our finances. Isn't that a pretty graph? I want a little bit of credit for how nice that graph is. Just nod and be like, wow. What I really wanted is for the things to come up out of the ground, but that wasn't working. So let's do the last goal. We need to learn to develop circles of belonging. We've all been referring to a paper that Tim Keller did that talks about church size dynamics. We spent a lot of time talking as our leadership and our staff about what happens to a church as it grows, and we're growing. And what happens to a church as it grows is oftentimes when you're about 200 people, you know everybody. That church is your circle of belonging. But the larger a church gets, the more impossible that becomes. So where do we expect for people when they come to the church for the first time to experience a sense of being like, this is my place. These are my people. And like I said to you before, there's three places that's happened. Small groups, which are growing, Sunday school classes, which we're still trying to tweak, and then our shepherding groups, which you're going to see some changes in the next year as well. We're grasping at that. But this time next year, we want to see us have made even more progress on you not feeling like you're just an isolated individual. Regardless of which plan we go with and which avenue of ministry we tend to emphasize as a church, you need to know that it is the heart of this church to not let you simply be an isolated, disconnected person. You can be an on-the-books member and not really involved in the life of the church. We don't want that. And so we want to make it easy for you. We don't put any unnecessary impediments from you. But we want to make it clear to you, like, hey, this is the way. Come join us for this. Come build some friendships. And as we program in this year trying to figure it out, we want your feedback. And honestly, we may even talk about doing some surveys in the next couple of years to hear the kinds of things that you've enjoyed or the way those things have laid out for us. Okay? See, y'all, there we go. That's our vision for 2020 and where we want to go forward. We're praying that God would give us blessing and all this, but I can promise you, again, by God's grace, we'll be here this time. We'll be in the new building next year, and I'll be putting this slide up on two big fancy screens that you'll be groaning about. And it'll still be red and a color that Whitney doesn't like, but that's okay. All right, I did want to leave about 2 or 3 minutes for questions. I know we're running a little bit past time, but I got 2 or 3 minutes for questions. What you got in terms of just burning issues inside your belly? Who are you pointing me to, Whitney? Oh, Kurt has a microphone if you want to say it out for everybody can hear. That was that clear? Oh, here we go. Got one right there in the back. Let's get Wayne back there.
You mentioned having the ideal goal July 1st. I have a history of in construction, and I know how construction goes. Is that what percentage feasible do you think that is?
That's a good question. And I could, James is here, right? We are contractually, see James Duck? We are contractually connected to our construction people to have exactly 12 months from the beginning of construction, which began on July the 22nd. So that's a hard date for us. And I don't think we've said strongly as often as we can to our construction people, there is no flex with that date. And they've assured us we are well on schedule, but they're hedging their own bets as well. Now, everybody from the outside, if you draw by, you'd be like, oh, it's almost done. We'll be there next week. Okay. Not there. A lot of internal stuff going on the inside. Drywall should be up in the next 2 weeks. HVAC is almost all put in except for the big units in the back. The electrical is about 50% done because we're trying to make sure we got enough light switches. We had to put the wedding bridesmaids room on their own circuit so we don't blow the fuse every single time with all that curling irons. I'm not kidding. That's the kind of detail that people are going to. We had to do the same thing for doorknobs that were going to be on each one of the doors and how the doors were going to have slits in them so you could see on the inside. And the detail, you cannot imagine what's been going on and the amount of work. Can I do something real quick, by the way? I need to just highlight the fact, Courtney, are you here? Where's Courtney Jones? Is she here or did she leave? I thought she was. Okay. Britt, tell your wife that we said that she was unbelievably helpful. And I'm not taking anything away from what Anna Dabbs is doing or what Jill Garner's doing or what Whitney's doing. But I'm going to tell you, she's a champ and has got it going on. Her expertise has been unbelievable for us in that regard. I want to say thanks for that. And it goes without saying that James Harper has a second unpaid job. So whatever gifts you can shovel his way are also appropriate. Does that give you an idea, Wayne, about timing? But we're praying for July 1st. Honestly, I'd love into May. While we're asking. Big God, right? What other question do we have? Yeah, Eve. I saw you, and Eva's name came into my head. I saw EV in Eva's name. You're not little Eva. I know exactly. Sorry.
I didn't hear you mention anything about staff, and I know we've had a lot of staffing changes. First of all, how's that going to play into our new year, and will there be more other staffing changes?
Yes. Thank you for that question, because I didn't get through my presentation because I ran out of time, but I need to mention that, don't I? By the way, get on your Church Center app. 65% of you have gotten on the app. I'm so blessed by that, because I was hoping for 50 this time last year. But let's talk about new staff introductions really quickly. First of all, we are delighted to announce that we have hired Randall Bryant to be our new Worship Arts Director. If you got those numbers, yes, absolutely. I'll tell him that you had a smattering of applause. He is now finishing up a semester at the school he's teaching at in Houston, Texas. He's one of the worship leaders at Christ the King PCA in there. We are delighted to have Randall. Randall's first day is June the 1st because he's got to finish out this semester. So you won't see him around until this summer, which he was real disappointed not to get an office in this beautiful building. Secondly, we added Luke Jones as our church administrator, who is actually up and running. He's been going at it for almost 2 months now. He's got shocking amounts of competence and ability to sort of move forward. And then finally, just this last week, we were able to add Susanna Levy as our office assistant as well. So I did everything I could to crop Mark's face out of that, but it didn't look good enough for it. But this is our new staff. Now, having said that, what that means is we're in a time of transition for three people who have been unbelievably giving in their giving to this church. The first of which, we have to recognize Homer Harris as being the guy who got us all organized, okay? If you see Homer Harris, give him a nice sweet hug, which I'm sure he loves people to invade his personal space like that. But Homer's been amazing for us. Secondly, we have to recognize David Dixon, who not only brought a level of, yes, absolutely, not only brought a level of organization and sort of doing a lot of grunt work on our behalf, but brought sunshine into this office every single day with an attitude like you can't imagine. And that means we're also having to say goodbye to Katrina Colston, who has actually been one of the foundational bedrocks. You're sitting in the pew you're sitting in this morning to a large degree because of Katrina's offering in our church. And so if you find those people, if you've got time to write them a note, email the office. We'll send you things. That'd be a great way to reach out and love and care for those new the old staff as we sort of make this transition. But God's been unbelievably gracious to us in these three search committees we had to juggle this year, which was a lot going on. But the volunteers just killed it and really sacrificed well. All right, I've gone 5 minutes over. Thank you all for your attention and your time. Let's prepare our hearts for worship as we pray together. Let's close. Lord Jesus, we're grateful for all the things that you've given us this year. We celebrate that. We celebrate you. Father, everyone in this room would say that we deflect every piece of glory that we would ever give to ourselves to you, because you're the one who manufactured this. You're the one who brought these people to our front door. You're the one who gave us the insight to try to put together better small groups. And you're the one who motivated your people to give, to write checks to the building. And even though, Father, that building is not yet paid for, it's been remarkable what you've done. Thank you. Thank you. All praise, all glory to you. Give us grace, Father, we pray in 2020, that we'll gather again in this same way next year and look back and say it was all because of you. Would you do that? We ask in Jesus' name, amen.